Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we archive these programs. That's right. Radio shows page is where you'll find all of the programs, 200-plus, for 4 years' work and counting, as it were, for this radio broadcast. And for 32 years, I've been talking with people and trying to find out where they're coming from and why and where they're going and why they're taking us there if they have any positions of authority. And we're going to jump, you know, we've had on this program a gentleman who we jumped into the theater, movie business, and talking about conscious creation films. And today we're going to be talking along those same lines with Ted Poppe. He is the owner and publisher of Illumination Arts and Diamond Clear Vision. And Ted, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, you happen to be here in our town, beautiful town of Santa Barbara, to basically have some very special events around the California, up and down the coast, with various authors who have put out their works that we will be interviewing
yes.
over the course of the next few months.
Right.
And I think one of the things that I wanted to jump into, and I've got a couple of books over here, one in particular that I'll be honest with you, I love the book, but I haven't really read much of it, and that's
right.
A Course in Miracles.
That's my baby.
And I still have one of the original versions
yes.
that has the darker blue with the gold trim and all that beautiful thing, and onion paper, so
yep.
it's very thin as far as that's concerned, but it's a thick volume with, what is it, all three or
three
four?
Volumes.
Three volumes.
Yep.
There's the workbook, and there's the manual, and then
the text.
And the text.
That's it.
I'm
yeah.
thinking, okay, the difference between the manual and the text is, but we won't go there.
Okay.
What I want to know, as we here on this program pursue new paradigms for a new world, we're trying to give people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true.
Right.
How has, and this actually leads me into a little of your history in terms of how long you've been involved in this specific genre, if we
mm-hmm.
will, how has the publishing industry changed as far as its greater acceptance of more conscious creation, more metaphysical, more spiritual types of works, metaphysical, and the types of works that are coming out, the quality of those types of works by the various authors around the world?
Well, you know, that's an interesting subject. You know, Devours was one of the early ones, and they
yes.
were out here, and I think they were out here, weren't they?
I believe they were,
and
yes.
Ojai, and you got Ojai, too.
Mm-hmm.
Ojai was a hot spot for a long time with Krishnamurti. You know, back in the old days, and we can call those the old days, there were very few people in the United States who were dealing with sort of consciousness expansion or consciousness changing or transformation of consciousness or even self-help, for that matter. And I think one of the things that has altered it is the idea of self-help, say 12-step programs and movements sort of that, when people sort of start to empower themselves. When people started to believe that they could empower themselves, then it did open up publishing to the ability to publish works that were self-help, and then ultimately begin to, you know, look at serious spirituality, serious works of spiritual, especially contemporary ones. The contemporary ones really tend to be the best. I mean, they're designed, they were brought into this period of time for our contemporary consciousness, and they deal with what's going on with us on a day-to-day basis. And I think when people begin to use those and actually practice and utilize the principles, they feel the change in themselves, and it does change the way they look at the world, and in that sense, it changes the world for them as well. So.
Yeah. And you've been doing this for how long?
Well, I've been involved with, say, A Course in Miracles for 26 years. I was sued for a copyright violation on two continents in the United States and also in Australia. That started in 1996, and that actually got me into the publishing industry. we put out that version in Australia as an alternate version to the one that you have, the one that was put out by the Foundation for Inner Peace and Foundation for A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually an older edit. It was the edit that Bill Sedford first did from Helen's original scribe notes, and it was deposited in the Edgar Cayce Library. And that's where we retrieved it from as part of the discovery process. And then five of us in Australia were given the guidance to put it back together the way it was he originally edited it, and we began to give it away freely, and that's when we got sued in Australia. prior to that in the United States, we were giving away sections of it at a place called Endeavor Academy that I was the administrator of. And the foundation sued us for copyright violation as well. So that's where I got involved to put out. We first put that out in about 2001. And that became the Thedford Foundation in Australia. And when I came back to the United States, I felt that I was to do that. The next thing I knew was a friend of mine presented me with a children's book called We Are One. And she was a Course in Miracles student, and she was given the words and then the illustrations over a course of 10 months. When I saw that, I knew I was supposed to be involved in making it popular worldwide. And the next one you see there, Teachings of the Inner Ramana, I was in the bathroom one day. I was in the bathroom one day, and the things that have been guiding me for 25 years said, publish the teachings of the Inner Ramana and buy a publishing company. So that's when I got involved and started Illumination Arts and Diamond Clear Vision.
What is Ramana?
Well, Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi was, in a sense, a contemporary and well-respected and enlightened Indian sage who taught self-inquiry. And he actually, I would say, of any of the gurus out of the East, was the one who was influenced contemporary Eastern sort of thought and spirituality the most. He passed away, and a friend of mine picked up a book by him. The book sort of became alive one day. It sort of glowed on her table. And she said, I know you have something to offer me. And she began to hear an inner voice that introduced himself as the Inner Ramana. Huh? And the Inner Ramana is tantamount to what A Course in Miracles would call the Holy Spirit. The Urantia would call the indwelling thought adjuster.
I've never heard that one before.
The indwelling thought adjuster is what the Urantia book speaks of. And what it's saying is that within us, because there is only one mind, we're all sort of like, you know, there is one self. We're all sort of connected to that self at our deepest core, at the level of soul. We're all capable of retrieving information to help us sort of change the way we look at the world and experience ourselves. And in the Eastern tradition, there's never been this tradition of guidance to say we have here, you know, like where people actually begin to get an inner voice, you know, sort of like helping them along in their daily endeavor. Well, Ramana Maharshi seems to be the voice that will be used by the Holy Spirit to help those of the Eastern tradition begin to get in touch with that single self and begin to be able to follow the guidance as to how they awaken in the world. To be able to live sort of the way we talk about in the world, but not of the world.
Yeah. I've been having conversations with people and, of course, sharing this on the program as well about the grappling, if you will, that I do between the concepts that I learned as I was growing up through metaphysics, even as a child and a young adult, a teen, and then my introduction into metaphysics through the first book I ever read from cover to cover, which was Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi, that set me on my search, if you will. It was funny. I was also working for a Christian station, and I shared that with one of the ministers who would have this. Oh, no, once you find Jesus, your search is over. And I thought, no, actually, I found Jesus, and it's just begun. I grapple with the concepts of duality that are taught throughout all of the great writings, the great religions of the world, and also the concept of oneness that we are all headed for. And I had a great conversation the other night on the phone with a gentleman, and I threw this out as a question to him on his radio program, and I said, if we came from the one, the all, and then suddenly for whatever reason, and that was sort of where my question was going, we decided to create this world and experience the duality and so on and so forth, and we're going back to the one, what was the point? It seemed to me that if the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-present, all-pervading essence of the universe, which we are all part of and are returning to, what would it, they, we need with this experience if we already are the epitome of everything that exists in the universe? And I realize that that's a big one.
But as a matter of fact,
what's the meaning of life?
It's the only one.
But it just, but it was like it came to me about 4 or 5 months ago. I'm going, okay, duality, oneness. Duality has an arrow going to oneness. Then what's the point of duality if we came from oneness?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, when you experience the answer to that question,
I'll let you know.
You'll never have another question. You'll be living in a constant solution.
Or I won't be here physically.
Well, you'll be here physically, but you'll you'll laugh. You'll laugh at a lot more things. No, the truth is that's what the Course in Miracles deals with.
Yeah.
The idea that there was a tiny mad idea at which, you know, the Son of God, the creation of God, remembered not to laugh.
Yeah.
And when he remembered not to laugh, this serious sort of situation developed. And in the remembering not to laugh, a dream began, and it was a dream of separation. As you heal your mind of separation, the dream begins to disappear. So ultimately, you're headed back to a state that precludes the ability for the dream of separation to ever exist.
So the dream, as the Hindus refer to it, as
Maya,
is where we are now.
We seem to be participating in this dream, and they call it Maya. We call it a dream. Mm-hmm. You know,
and I've asked people constantly over the course of time, with this program in particular, it's been more focused. What in the world are we here to achieve? And I use the example of the space program, for example. It's the last time that I know in my own history where humanity on a large level collectively was focused on one goal and one dream of putting a man on the moon. Didn't matter that it was an American, because when we launched, everybody held their breaths hoping for the next week to 10 days that these men would come back safely.
Right.
So the world as we know it.
Right.
Okay, come on, guys, do it. Make it around them and land and do your thing and come back safe, because what a tragedy if we lose you and so on. And that was the last time we ever did anything of a positive nature. So I would ask this question. The one answer, and I can codify it down into one word that I have gotten from most every single person, and this goes to what you were just saying, because I think it's still in the same category.
Right.
The answer is joy.
Right.
There's nothing else. That's what we are here to achieve.
Right.
Nothing more.
Well, and in a sense, it's like God created us, or if we want to, that's what I call it. People get offended by the word God, whatever you want to call it, the universe. We're here to express the joy of creation, the joy of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't do that alone, because we can't experience total joy unless everybody's completely happy. So there must be a way for all of us to regain that state of total joy of oneness,
right,
where there's no conflict. Now, in a condition of oneness, there would be no conflict,
right,
because there'd be nothing to contradict it and nothing contradictory within it.
Right.
And that's what we're here to achieve. And we do that individually by healing our mind of the idea that we're separate from everyone.
Yeah.
And that single self that they talk about in the East, and the single self, or the one self that the Course talks about, is the self that we're all returning to experience.
Yeah.
Now, that's something that's within us and not outside of us.
Yeah.
What seems to be outside of us is this dream.
Yeah.
And it is the dream that sort of gives us, in a sense, the reflection we need to see where we still need to be healed. And we know that we need to be healed, we get reaction. We react in one way or the other, but the way we don't react is joyfully.
Yeah,
and we don't react joyfully, we know we're looking at something that's not joyful. So we're not looking at oneness, we're looking at separation or duality.
Yeah.
At that moment, there's help that's been given to us, and that's, you know, the universal inspiration, the Holy Spirit, the indwelling thought adjuster, the inner Ramana, whatever you want to call it. In Hebrew, it's the something Kadesh, where we can go inward, get a new vision within ourselves, and look upon what we thought was separation in a way that shows us that we're healing our mind rather than going further into fear or further into separation.
I love the way the Impersonal Life describes it as it's a conversation that the author, if you will, is having with the reader and saying, you know, you think that you are making choices and you think that you have free will, but what really is going on is I am giving you those thoughts.
Right.
So when I take a look and I start looking at all of the great religions and their teachings of the duality, good and evil, and so forth, and that we're all going to return to God and there's the oneness, and I start thinking about putting all this together, and it's not so much, oh, how frustrating, I this is ridiculous, why are we on this silly treadmill? This is just insanity. I came to a conclusion, especially with the times in which we are in today, and we could put economic times.
Right.
And I look at that and I say, you know, all of the great religions tell us who and what we are. We are these great, incredible beings, almost, you know, royalty, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the lifestyle and the treadmill.
Right.
And I say, this life is demeaning to us. This life is inferior to what we were created
Absolutely.
To live.
Absolutely.
Then why are we doing this silly thing? That's kind of where it comes from.
Right. It is where it comes from, and the interesting thing about it is that you really can't get an answer to that question until you get to the bottom of your thinking that shows you that that's the way you're thinking and you're sick and tired of it.
Yeah.
And you don't have the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that's what happened to me. I got to a bottom where I realized, listen, I don't have the answer. I'm sick and tired of my own thinking. I need some help here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a divine intervention, and that occurred. And then my mind opened up to a whole new sort of way of thinking that was introduced to me. Jesus or the Holy Spirit, and these other guides of mine, and they introduced me to the single self that I really am,
right.
That's beyond the dream of space and time, and began to show me how to alter my thinking here so as to not experience the way I had been experiencing it.
Yeah.
Now, you can't do it conceptually, that's all I know. You really have to do it experience by asking for the help at each point where you feel a choice needs to be made to not see it that way. But until you actually see that you're doing it to yourself by your own thinking, there's no real change possible.
And there are systems in place today on the planet, in this country as well as others, that want us to maintain that old thought process of strict individuality and strict individual choices and achievements and I did it.
Right.
You talk about the inner voice. You talk about the Ramana,
mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I share with people two things. One is that if you listen to and follow, it's not enough just to listen.
Right.
Follow everything. You have to follow.
Yep.
And if you do, it's the only guarantee I ever make. It's the only guarantee I've ever made in my life
mm-hmm.
that it will never, ever, ever lead you astray. It may challenge you. It will never hurt. But it will challenge you, and it will take you in the right direction. So that took me to another thought. There are over 7 billion people mm-hmm. on the planet. And you talked about the ability to conceptualize this. And maybe this is my effort in that. But as futile as that may be, 7 billion people. Let's just say for the sake of argument that all 7 billion decided, I'm going to listen to and follow the prompting
mm-hmm.
of whatever we want to call it.
Great.
And they go off and they each individually will do something totally different from the other 699,999,999.
Right.
But they're all working in unison, just like, here's the concept,
mm-hmm.
the cells of the human body.
Well, in a sense, that's true. I mean, the Christians would call it the body of Christ. I mean,
sure.
That's the idea behind mm-hmm. it. And it is also true, because we seem to be individual, the journey back to oneness must be an individual one as well. But when we begin to all listen to, let's call it the universal inspiration, so that everybody gets a shot at this.
Okay.
So if everybody began to follow the prompts and the direction from the universal inspiration, and we are one, we're all being guided back in a way that makes sense to us individually, and a way that actually does no harm to the what we think is the other individuals who are also doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So every solution that comes, every answer that comes from that universal inspiration is not only for your good, but it's for the good of everyone involved, because it's a single voice from a single source that we're hearing before the idea of separation actually has the ability to affect what we hear.
Yeah.
It's like the body or the ego is a membrane of separation. Like the inspiration is always speaking. The voice of love is always speaking. When it hits that membrane, the ego, which is what you're talking about before,
mm-hmm.
begins to speak about its own survival. Like, how are we going to keep this going? How are we going to keep this institution going? Or how are we going to keep money? When you don't pay attention at him, wait a second, the voice for inspiration or the voice for the return to oneness can begin to direct you back. But that's where it takes the courage initially to listen to that voice and begin to follow it initially. But if you do, and I guarantee everybody the same thing, everybody who begins to follow that voice and listen to it one decision at a time or one direction at a time will gain trust in themselves and gain trust in that voice. And eventually they are going to be living a life that's totally fulfilling and it's beyond anything they ever imagined in their dreams. But it's going to give them the fulfillment that they've always been looking for. It may not necessarily be the form, but the interior condition of being happy and being in a condition of joy will be there. I guarantee that.
Well, I have to use the example of, I used to bicycle everywhere. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, and a lot of flat streets and everything's blocked in the grid system, and it's a great thing. And I'm living in a trailer at this time, and I'm bicycling out to the transmitter site where the broadcast facilities were. And there are only two or three main east-west roads, and then there are a lot of intersecting north-south roads. So I jump on the bike, and I head down a particular east-west path, heading west towards the transmitter. And suddenly I get this prompting, turn at the next corner. And I'll go ahead and go that way, and then I go this way, and I get to the place on time with no problems. There's no delay. And then there's a one time I do that, only this time the prompting says, okay, turn here. You know, I really think this is silly. I really don't need to be turning this way. And there was something in me that said, no, you need to go back. So I literally U-turned, went back the other way, made the turn. Nothing happened, and I don't know whether the prompting was to help me to avoid a problem or not. Be that as it may, it was one of those things that was really strong. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if you had just turned when you were prompted to do so, you wouldn't have had to do the U-turn.
Right.
And then, of course, the ego jumps in and says, yeah, and if you'd made that turn before, you'd be further ahead and further ahead and further. You know, it's like, oh, geez, will you please shut up? But it's that kind of experience, one at a time, as you say.
Right.
One at a time. And now, if I hadn't turned around and gone the other way, there's no reason for me to beat myself up. I got there safely. The world is still spinning. Life goes on, as always, around here.
So one of the things that I've learned is when you follow the direction, you really do save time. Had you followed the direction initially, you would have saved yourself time. And that could be the entire lesson.
That could
be
it.
We will save time.
Yeah.
You know, it will by listening to that voice, we do save time. And that's where the miracles occur.
Yeah.
When we begin to allow the voice to direct us and a man to save time, we cut out periods of time that it would take. Like the Course says, it could take 1,000 years to learn a lesson that in an instant can be brought to you by this voice for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And you learn instantaneously instead of having to go these circuitous routes to get to the same point that could take lifetimes, thousands of years. And that is part of the lesson plan, to learn that that is what happens when you do follow that inner prompting, when you follow the guidance. It's true.
It is extraordinary. And I remember going through a personal growth program where they had you write something out on a large piece of paper with a big Sharpie. And I said, okay, and my desire is to not only listen to but follow the promptings of the inner voice. And then I signed it. You know, and it was a quasi-contract.
Right.
But that's really what we need to start doing.
Yes.
It's the only guidance that we really need. Now, when people go to a psychic, a seer, a clairvoyant, etc., my observation is they don't have the answer for you in as much as all they're going to do is confirm what you already know.
Right. My experience is that nobody really listens until they hear it within themselves.
Yeah.
When you hear it within yourself, then you're willing to like listen and also follow. When you hear it from something outside of yourself, and that's just the nature of the illusion. You don't necessarily trust anything that's not you.
Mm-hmm.
When you finally hear the voice within yourself and you follow and you learn, then you believe. There's a book that we publish, the audio book. It's called The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. And the lesson that it teaches over and over again is to hear my voice is nothing. To follow my voice is everything.
Yes.
And that's the major lesson. Like anybody could read any one of these books, and that's great.
Yeah.
But to actually open your mind and begin to like follow the lesson plan of a course, or like follow, you know, you get a direction like you did, get a direction and listen to it and do what it says.
Yeah.
That's where you grow in trust for that which is beyond space and time and which we can see. We call it the unseen, but what's real. And the real you that seems to be still within space and time. And you learn to be able to work and cooperate with something that's unseen, yet a force in everyone's life.
Ted Poppe is my guest, and we encourage you to stay with us. He is the publisher and owner of Illumination Arts and Diamond Clear Vision. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Don't go away. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Understanding is what it is all about, and we bring folks here on the program to get their perspectives, their ideas, as we have brought Ted Poppe, who is a publisher as well as the owner of, I guess, there are two publishing companies?
It's one publishing company, two imprints.
Two imprints, okay. Right. And again, that's Illumination Arts and Diamond Clear Vision. I'm assuming that each of those, or at least one of them, has a .com after it.
www.diamondclearvision.com. That's the best place to go.
Look out to see the books you're offering, and so forth.
The books, the children's books we publish under Illumination Arts, and the books for adults we publish under Diamond Clear Vision.
Just out of curiosity, how old is the youngest published author? Do you have any child published books?
Well, what's interesting is that's something that we've been thinking about doing. We have a book that we're thinking about that's by an autistic boy who wrote a book himself about autism. And we're actually in the process of looking for books by children for children.
Yeah.
You know, there's this big thing with the Indigo children.
Yes.
I think it would be great to have children's stories published, not only because the children would like them, because the adults would begin to get something out of them as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we publish a book now that's The Most Important Question, which is a true story based on an incident in Albert Einstein's life where a young girl named Alexandra Elizabeth goes to Dr. Einstein and asks him what he thought was the most important question in the world. And his answer is, after days of thinking about it, is the most important question is the universe a friendly place or not?
Oh.
And this is a true story. And she goes through, on her way home, she goes through her thought process, and she finds the answer for that question within herself. So one of the things that the book is designed to do, now it looks like it's a children's book, and mm-hmm. children get a lot out of it, but the adults who read it begin to examine their own thinking to see what they feel about the universe. And what people find is that their own thinking is what creates their experience. And that's the key to all this.
It's to me most extraordinary to have the opportunity to have folks such as yourself on the program. But you mentioned Albert Einstein, and I was looking at a quote by him on my Facebook page, which I don't go to very often. But and basically the quote is, "The intuitive mind is the sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant." And he goes on to say, "And we have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift."
That was on my Facebook page, so I really liked that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That was brilliant. And it's entirely true. You know, the intuitive mind is the mind that's connected to the source of oneness, which is deep within ourselves, buried by all the fear and guilt that we have. And we begin to allow that intuitive mind to rise up. I mean, the ego does kick up.
Sure.
Ego kicks up, and that's why we have, to give the whole theory succinctly as possible, the world is a projection of the mind that's asleep. As the mind that's asleep wakes up, it must project a new world. Now, the old world where the people that the mind is still sleeping, that part of the mind that's still sleeping, it wants to continue sleeping because it hasn't decided to wake up. So it's going to kick up a storm.
Yeah.
It's going to kick up an earthquake. It's going to kick up a tidal wave. It's going to kick up all manner of things within the earth itself just to keep that old model alive. But, you know, when two or more are joined, the power of joining in the single mind is all the power in the universe. And there is no power that's going to be greater than that, because the only other power that there is the power of individual minds that are not joined and cannot join, because the idea of being separate and being an individual means you can't join.
Yeah.
Power is in joining people to come together for purpose.
Yeah.
The new paradigm is going to be collaboration in joint venture, in ventures of single purpose that are given to us by spirit. And that's what the Diamond Clear Vision and Illumination Arts is about. It's a collaborative venture between minds that are awakening, following the guidance to work together to put together books, inspired books for the Great Awakening.
You know, Greg Braden talked about that on one of our programs, where he talked about a study that had been conducted, and what they did, they wanted to study the effectiveness of collaboration versus competition. And they put a group of people together competing against one another to see what the level of productivity and achievement was versus those who collaborated and cooperated and worked together in terms of that concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the collaborators,
absolutely,
the cooperators that achieved higher, greater things than
absolutely
the competitors.
Absolutely.
Because
it has to be.
Yeah.
It cannot not be, because purpose organizes.
Yeah.
When our minds are attuned to a single purpose, the organization takes on a brighter and brighter and more inclusive scope, and everybody becomes sort of fulfilled within that sort of organizing principle of single purpose. So everybody is working together, which saves time and is much more efficient and gives you a higher level of creativity. It just has to be.
Absolutely.
The law of physics would prove that to be true.
I've been in broadcasting for 32 years, and I've been in different positions, never an upper management, but I've been an operations manager, program director, and so forth. And I have told everybody, including my bosses, I don't care what the other stations are doing. I am concerned with us being better today than we were yesterday. That's all I care about. That's all that matters. We have enough to do competing, if you will, using that word,
mm-hmm,
with our yesterdays,
right,
our laurels. Is that you can't rest on your laurels,
right,
which I know what a laurel wreath is and why would you want to sit on a laurel. But anyway, there's too much to do to make the improvements on what we are doing for me to even bother with what the competition.
Right.
If the GM wants to deal with that and others, then that's their job, and then do that. And then they will guide me as to, okay, we want to steer the ship of, mm-hmm, of radio this direction or that direction.
Right.
I'll do that.
Right.
But to me, you're not really single-minded. And as a matter of fact, that takes me to the whole issue of multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
There was a study that was just released that says that those who multitask are less productive than those who, as my boss has coined the phrase, serial single task.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that in my own work from day to day. If I get on the phone and I'm trying to finish up the last couple of keystrokes on something,
right,
I'm invariably backspacing and so forth, and I'm not really listening to, mm-hmm, the person on the phone.
That's absolutely true. Listening to me is the key. I mean, really being able to listen, and you could hear everything. I mean, the universe is playing a song, and everything is involved in a song.
Yeah.
When you hear it, everything happens in miraculous split timing the way it's meant to be.
Yeah.
And it's much more efficient. You don't waste time. You do what you need to do when it's possible to get it done. And when it's not possible to get it done, you're not wasting your time doing that, but you are given something else to do. So it all fits together sort of seamlessly. And that's my experience as well. You know, as far as what you're talking about before, you know, there's a contemporary sage who sort of, I guess he's British out of Jamaica though, named Muji.
And I've heard of him.
He'll be on Facebook as well. One of the things that he says is that we need to become friends rather than conceptual adversaries. The adversarial nature of competition is built into every one of us. You know, that's something that we have to see for what it is and learn to use the energy of competition in a whole different way, not to compete with each other, but use the energy in order to come together in a single purpose and develop sort of alliances and friendships wherein which we work together rather than arguing about little things that nothing gets done. You know, join together and use that energy and sort of like let everybody do what they can do best. You know, one of the things that I say is everybody has an ability and talent.
Yeah.
So if you take a group and you let the people who have the ability to do things do what they are that their heart sings to do, everything's going to get done. But it's going to get done by somebody who's doing because they love it rather than somebody that's being told to do it because of the conflict and the competition that's taking place between the individuals and their, yeah, concepts. And I think that's what I think the new paradigm is. I think the new paradigm comes from people doing what they love. Expressing their innate abilities, that are given through creation,
right.
And giving of those freely so that more be given. And as we're given more, lack and sort of like limitation are all passed by. We're living in a whole new world.
And yet there would be they out there would say, okay, one, you are un-American. That flies in the face of capitalism and free enterprise. That's a socialist attitude, and you need to be banished from the country because that is wrong thinking for success of the great country of the United States of America, because that's where we live.
Right.
Okay. If we lived in another country, I would probably use...
Well, my actual hope is that utilizing the idea of the universal inspiration and allowing people come together for a single purpose, such as this publishing company where we don't have any contracts and everybody's in it really for love, and if we make money, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that what develops is sort of a demonstration model of a new way of doing business and a new way of cooperating together that shows that while it may have been un-American a minute ago, it definitely is a new way to go, and everybody's going to win rather than somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. And if we're going to come together as a world in one world, and what you mentioned before about the astronauts, to me, one of the most important points in this whole development of a new consciousness came when that astronaut looked out that window for the first time and saw the smallness of the planet Earth and the vastness of space and said, oh my God, we all live on that one thing. That sort of reverberated in everyone's mind everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that was a seminal moment in the whole consciousness movement that goes unnoticed, but it communicated everywhere.
Yeah. I was for about a year and a half in my, I think, late 20s, early 30s. I may have been earlier than that. Nonetheless, I was of the Baha'i faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking with some of the members of the Baha'i faith, and they were alive during that time, and they were watching the television, and some of the comments like that mm-hmm. were made, and how the words of their founder, Baha'u'llah, came ringing forth about how, where are the borders?
Right.
We're all one people on one planet.
Yep.
What is all of this silliness about, you have this and I have that, but I want what you have mm-hmm. and you can't have what I have. Stop it.
Right.
This is silly. We're all one people.
That's it.
And that may fly in the face of a lot of the isms that are out there, regardless whether it's governmental isms or religious isms. So what? I think the time has come, and we're seeing that now.
Yep.
Around the country as well as around the world. We see the various, as they're calling them, revolutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often wondered when, because we haven't had anything like what's happening now across this country.
Right.
We haven't had anything like that since the 60s.
Right.
And I kept asking the question over the last 15, 20 years, what's it going to take? What's going to ignite the fire
mm-hmm.
under people to get out and say enough is enough?
Right.
To say, look, this isn't working for everybody.
Right.
You know,
I think that's the key. When people begin to understand that it's not working for everybody, but they don't have a solution that eliminates other people. Generally speaking, what happens is they recognize, oh, this isn't working, and they just go the opposite way, which also doesn't work.
Right.
Finally, when consciousness itself starts to remember that neither one of the ways actually work, that there's got to be a better way,
right.
Then something else can develop. That's how A Course in Miracles got here. Two colleagues at Columbia University School of Psychology got together. There was conflict in the department. They said, listen, there's got to be a better way. We can't go on this way.
Right.
And into that situation, the voice for reason, the voice for love began to dictate how each one of them could change their mind and experience a solution to that problem.
I loved Edgar.
As one.
Yeah, I loved Edgar Cayce and mm-hmm. his attitude.
Right.
In spite of the fact that, if I'm correct in my remembrance from the writings, he was a Christian. He was mm-hmm. a fundamentalist Christian.
Yep.
Yet he still continued to channel.
Right.
It's like, are you kidding me?
Right.
How can you fly in the face of all of the teaching and the doctrine and dogma that you have been that you've embraced,
right.
And I have actually, in my years working for the Christian station and since, I've come across more people who are into their respective belief, but they're doing stuff over this direction mm-hmm. or that direction,
right.
And I applaud them, even though they still hold the label. And
right.
Even I've shared with how my Catholic upbringing, there are so many parts of that I love, the ritual, the ceremony, the incense and the candles. I love that. Okay.
That was an altar boy, so.
Ah, okay. I didn't quite make it there. I think one day I was an altar boy. I can't remember going back. But it's like, and yet in spite or maybe even because of all of that,
right,
they still say, you know what, because I interviewed a gentleman. He was a born-again Christian, Bible-believing, and so on and so forth. But he intentionally induces out-of-body experiences.
Right.
And I'm going, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I got to talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. And we've had him on a couple of times. Fascinating how in spite of, or again, maybe because of,
right,
the, I'll call it indoctrination, we've all had,
mm-hmm,
people are still willing to step outside the nine dots, outside the box.
Well, I think
it's extraordinary.
I think because when they really begin to have experiences that are guided or inspired by this universal inspiration, what I really feel, see, to me, like I've had direct sort of experiences of Jesus, and it flies in the face of everything that organized religions would like to make of him. I mean, he is a guy just like you and I, who asked the same questions we're asking today and began to have experiences of an answer that was none of this world. He really is the model, and that's what Edgar Cayce taught.
Yeah.
Edgar Cayce taught that Christ, Jesus, is the model. He's what, when we follow that, we will all one day be like, yeah, that, because we will be of one mind, and that will be the mind of Christ.
Yeah.
Now, the Christian terminology turns people off.
Right.
But there's other ways to speak about it.
Right.
It doesn't have to be Christ. It is that oneness. It, mm-hmm, is the mind of, you know, it is the mind of oneness. It is the mind of the single creation, the universal inspiration, yeah, that we're all responding to anyway. And when we become aware of it and conscious of it, there is no competition.
Yeah.
We're all headed in the same direction.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the same. Everybody wants to be happy.
Yeah.
There's nobody on the planet that doesn't do what they're doing to be unhappy. Everybody's doing to be happy.
Yeah.
If we saw that the source of happiness was the same source within each one of us, we would begin to eliminate the need to judge. We begin to eliminate the need to, you know, to withhold from people, and we would live a different way, because everybody's responded, yeah, to this, the same voice in a different way.
Yeah. I used to twist things around when I was at the Christian station for 15 years. I had the great privilege of interviewing all kinds of people, and I was interviewing people like you,
mm-hmm,
and the people who, I had one gentleman on who had channeled the writings of Paul,
mm-hmm,
which were nothing more than explanations of the,
right,
epistles in the Bible, because people weren't getting it,
right,
you know. But it wasn't a Christian book. And here's this guy channel it. And I interviewed psychics, and I interviewed astrologers. But I understood the terminology. I understood where management, ownership, advertisers, sponsors, programmers, mm-hmm, were coming from. And so I used their terminology,
right, exactly,
to bring these people forth. In the 15 years that I did that, I, mm-hmm, never received any complaints.
See, I think the key to that is what you're talking about, is really listening. When,
yeah,
you begin to listen to other people's, and we call it in A Course in Miracles, the symbols that they use to express what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
When you begin to use their symbols to express oneness in the way that makes sense to them, the mind automatically starts to change.
Yeah.
And then we begin to see our commonality.
Yeah.
And then we begin to have an experience of seeing that we're not against each other, we're for each other.
Yeah.
It's like egoic terms are designed to divide,
yes,
and keep separate.
Yes.
When you learn to use those terms in a different way, in the spirit of oneness, is what the Holy Spirit is. I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's the spirit of wholeness.
Right.
We're all whole. We're all,
right,
one.
Right.
The spirit of wholeness will direct us how to use terms that were previously designed to divide in ways that can show us that we're one, and we can begin to cooperate from that condition of oneness.
Yeah. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
A couple of final questions before we wrap up the program. Who is Ted Poppe?
Well, Ted Poppe is a guy just like you who began to have experiences of his own oneness and decided that the best way to live was to follow that voice. The experience came at the end of a long career of drug use. I was a heroin addict. I was living in Carmel Valley, and I had a profound experience of revelation. It lasted for about a month. And I was, after that, given A Course in Miracles, which I knew was the same voice, and began to listen and follow it. And so I'm just a guy like everybody else who's had an experience maybe a little bit before some other people, maybe a little bit later than some other people. And I feel that, you know, we're all headed to having the same experience of oneness, and I'm just sort of like the mouthpiece for what it is I'm doing. And that is sort of promoting the idea that within us all is the spirit of wholeness that we all begin to listen to. And I would like to publish books that help people hear that voice and follow. If they can lead a life like I am, I'm happy.
wonderful laugh. And this kind of goes, your answer kind of goes into my next question. What do you hope to and want to achieve through the work you're doing?
You know, the truth is, personally, I just want to continue to be able to unify my mind with the single will of creation and live a life of fulfillment based on following that guidance. Right now, it looks like I would like to set up, say, a Gideon Society for A Course in Miracles, where the book is available freely, so that anybody who wants it has access to it, and continue to sort of work in this new paradigm as a demonstration of a different way of living here, and offering people an alternative to what they think is the way they think they're supposed to live based on them.
Exactly. Well, Ted, thank you so much for joining us on the program. I want to remind you that the website you want to go to is diamondclearvision.com. That's diamondclearvision.com. My guest today, Ted Poppe, he's the publisher and owner of Illumination Arts and diamondclearvision.com. And we'll be having some of your authors on our program as time goes by. Looking forward to that, because everybody's got a different slant, even though it's all the same story. Mm-hmm. One of my listeners about 2-3 years ago made the comment. He says, and he was being critical. I was very much aware of the fact that he was a cynic, you know. And he said, you know, they're all saying the same thing. We're all one. We're all this. We're all this. And the only response I could give to him, I says, well, don't you think maybe there's a point there? So it's kind of exciting. And I thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we encourage you to go to richarddugan.com. We are linked to Ted's website, so certainly check that out. And again, the website, I'll give it to you directly, is diamondclearvision.com. I'm Richard Dugan, and we encourage you to tune in every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We are live, and we are streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. And also check out our archives page, and I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.